David Aparicio, tell us about the Chrysalis program. How did you devise it? Where did it all come from and what's it do?
Well, it started from the premise of me being a magistrate, a justice of the peace in the UK, which means I sit usually every other week on the bench, and as part of that, I alas sentence people that do things wrong. The problem for me was you tend to see the same people over and over again, and often the same people will come back month after month or 6 months after 6 months, and each time you see them, you have to give them a longer sentence, because that's how the system works, because you've got to make it what's technically called more onerous. What that results in is ultimately, when you see people regularly, their sentences get longer and more severe, and ultimately they end up going to prison. So it's like a one-way conveyor belt to prison, and it's quite sad to see that the individual doesn't recognise where they're going, but you can see very clearly that they're on a path. So the first thing that I looked at was what's wrong with our current system, because in the UK, on average, 75% of people that go to prison will reoffend within 2 years. You just need to think about that for a moment, because that's quite shocking. So 75% of people that go to prison reoffend within 2 years. And what we've actually got is what I call a broken business model, because no other industry would accept a 75% failure rate, would it?
No, that's right. Of course not.
Okay. Now, can you imagine if the airline industry, 75% of planes, didn't land in the right airport?
It'd be terrible.
There would be outcry, wouldn't
yeah,
there?
Of
there
course.
Would be shock and everyone would be upset. Or 75% of people that went into hospital had the wrong operations. You know, people would be shocked and dismayed by this. But for somehow, this is acceptable that 75% of people reoffend. Now, that's what really bothered me, that we've decided that this is okay. And one of the things is that we tend to have almost a view in society of, as long as it's not directly bothering us, we sort of lock it away and pretend it's not happening. But there's a fantastic saying that was said by Cardinal Mahone that I'd like to quote every now and then, and that is, any society, any nation, is judged on the basis of how it treats its weakest members, the last, the least, and the littlest. And if we're judged on how we're treating those individuals, it's not very well. And it's time for us to start doing something differently. So what I did was I considered, at the time, I was at the head of Royal Mail's learning and development function. And Royal Mail at that time, some 10, 15 years ago, was, probably still is, one of the largest employers in the UK, with hundreds of thousands of employees. And over the period of 20 years plus, I have had the luxury of spending tens of millions of pounds of Royal Mail's money, putting hundreds of thousands of people through learning and development programs. And I therefore wondered, you know what, I know a little bit about learning and development. Maybe it's a learning and development solution that will help people to change rather than a punishment solution. So I went off and did an element of research. And that research involved speaking to victims, offenders, magistrates, judges, police officers, prison officers, probation workers, anyone I possibly could do that had an opinion about offending. So that's how it all started.
So where did you go from there? What have you changed? What's got it happening the right way?
The thing that really struck me the most is that what we've done is we've got stuck in what I call false paradigms, okay? And these false paradigms basically took us down the wrong path. Now, there's a guy called Peter Drucker that you may have heard of.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, he said that what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets done. So it's almost like, be careful what you measure, because if you measure that, that's what you focus on. And all too often in many industries, the easiest things to measure are the ones that are measured. maybe not the right things, but the easiest things to measure are measured. Now, to give you an example of how that simple thing that Peter Drucker said impacts on the criminal justice system is, in the UK, what we do is we measure how many people we have in prison. And to give you a simple example, at the moment we have a minister for prisons. So if you've got a minister for prison, what will he measure? He'll measure the utilisation and the efficiency of a very expensive resource called the prison's estate. Now, that's what he's got to do because that's what his job title is. The problem with that is, how do you maximise the utilisation of an expensive resource?
I guess you put more people into it. You use it more often.
You put more people, you use it more. If that was a hotel chain, what's our occupancy rate? That's what we'd be focusing on.
Yeah, you'd increase the occupancy rate.
Increase the occupancy. Now, what we're doing is, by having a minister for prisons, what we're doing is we're tasking everyone to maximise the utilisation of our prison estate, which is occupancy. So much so that if any prison governor was to be running their prison half full, what do you think the consequences would be for them?
Oh, they'd probably get fired, I would imagine.
They'd get fired or that prison will close.
Yeah, indeed.
Right, so what are we doing? We're driving occupancy. Now, this is a very dangerous thing to do. At the moment in the UK, we have 87,000 people in prison, about 10,000 young men in prison at this moment in time. And these young men, alas, are our future generation coming through. And 10,000 of them are spending, you know, years and years in and out of the criminal justice system. This is quite sad. So let me go back to Peter Drucker. What gets measured gets managed. What gets managed gets done. So what are we measuring? Occupancy. So that's driving a set of behaviours. If we were to make one fundamental change in the criminal justice system, we could stop all of that. And it's very simple. All we have to do is change the Minister for Prisons job title to the Minister for Reducing Reoffending. Overnight, we've now changed what we're trying to do. And we're now driving the reoffending agenda rather than the occupancy agenda. So can you see, it's really important we're careful on what we're doing.
This is a fairly huge task for somebody to tackle it. So how did you go about it, David?
Well, what I realised was in my research that there were a couple of things that didn't work for me. And I realised that they didn't work for offenders or the criminal justice system. And let me just briefly say them each, and then you can tell me which ones you'd like me to explore. But the four or five things are, one, it's not about negative reinforcement, punishment. It's about positive reinforcement, creating capability. The second one is, it's not about training. It is about learning and development. The next one is, it's not about behaviours. It's not about addressing behaviours. It is about addressing thinking. The final one is, it's not about rehabilitation. It's about reintegration. Now, these four things are really important because when you go on the wrong ones, you end up driving a set of behaviours that is unhelpful. Do they make sense?
Yes, they do. But let's put it into context. You've got a guy that has been sentenced to some sort of incarceration, and you're going to work with him. How do you work on those four things?
Right. Well, the interesting thing is well, I'll use one of them. It's not about negative reinforcement punishment. It is about positive reinforcement, which is what I call creating capability. What we do all too often is tell people what they shouldn't do and what they've done wrong and how they've got it wrong. What we don't often do, and we do this quite a lot in training, we don't tell people what to do and how to do it. So we don't focus on the positives. So imagine this young offender wasn't offending, but let's pretend that they were a young child and they were learning to walk. So imagine this little baby's getting up against the chair and trying to toddle along the chairs, and they fall over. Now imagine, as a father, you walk over to that child and you smack it on the back of the legs and say, you know what, either get up and walk or don't walk, but don't make mistakes.
Mm. It's not going to work, is it?
That's not going to work, is it?
No, not at all.
I'm sorry, but that's exactly what we're doing with lots of our people within the criminal justice system. That negative reinforcement simply does not work, because negative reinforcement alone will never, ever produce a positive outcome. Okay, it causes resentment, it causes a disconnection from society, it causes a lot of things, but it would never get that person to say, right then, I'm going to, you know, pick myself up and go positively in my life.
So how do you go about giving positive reinforcement to a prisoner?
Well, one of the things is really getting them to start thinking, because what struck me, because you know I said it's not about behaviours, it's about thinking. One of the things that really struck me is, I don't know about you, but I thought that if you're in prison and you're sitting every night in a cell, that you'd be contemplating the very universe. You know, how did I get here? What mistakes? You know, and you'd be going over every step you've made that ended up getting you there. I was really surprised in speaking to lots and lots of people, male and female, that have been in prison. And that just simply doesn't take place. And I was fascinated. Why do people not think? And then I bumped into an amazing man, Dr. Edward de Bono.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Edward de Bono has allowed me to use some of his material in the Chrysalis program and endorse that, which is fantastic. But he said something that created clarity for me on this point, and that is, intelligence is something that we are all born with, but thinking is a skill that must be learned.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
Now, the truth of the matter is, many of us don't know how to think. And we don't know, we don't give ourselves time to think or room to think either. So we're whizzing around in life so much, we don't actually sit down and think about what we're doing and what we're doing. In fact, we don't have a plan. We have no idea of what we're aiming for. We just, you know, scrabble along a bit aimlessly. But if you don't know how to think, how can you think? Okay, so lots of individuals are struggling to put together the next phase of their life because they just simply haven't got the tools. What I worked out was, how can we start to give individuals a whole range of tools, sometimes I call them gifts, such that they can start to put all these things in place and for the first time start thinking for themselves and start thinking positively for themselves and, most importantly, break some of the false paradigms that they have in their lives, which then sets some of their behaviours up.
And this you do with those individual prisoners. You start to show them how to think.
Yes. Well, what I worked out was there was a certain journey that I would like people to go on. And what I realised was that it's quite fascinating, because I ended up with this thought popping into my head when I was talking to one young man, when I was interviewing one young man right at the beginning. And I don't know where it came from, but it's driven me ever since. And that is, there's nothing about a caterpillar that tells you it's going to become a butterfly.
That's right.
Because I just had this overwhelming feeling for this young man that, you know what, no one believes that he could achieve anything more than what he was achieving currently. And I thought, wow, that is shocking. When you're living a life of no hope, how terrible that life must be. No one has any belief in you. No one has any faith in you. And you have no belief in yourself. In fact, you have no hope that anything's going to change. And I thought that shocked me to the core, actually. So what I've wondered was, how could we help individuals to make that change from what everyone normally sees, you know, that caterpillar? How can we turn them into something much bigger than that, more amazing than that, into, let's call it, a butterfly? And what I realised was that the key stage in that transformation, of course, was the chrysalis stage, hence the name for the programme.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Yeah? Now, I don't know if you know, but what also struck me was, technically, the chrysalis stage in this transformation from caterpillar to butterfly is technically called the protected stage of development. And I went, wow. So without a protected stage of development, you don't get butterflies. Now that really hit a point in my psyche. And I thought, so if we create a protected stage of development, if we create the right environment for learning, can we help people to do something that is more close to a sustainable transformation rather than the usual temporary change? And that's what we've been able to achieve.
Wow. And what are the results? What are the results?
Well, the results are, I'll use two different results. We've been working with Reading Prison, which alas is closing shortly. It's an old prison in the middle of a town, and they can't expand it because, of course, we want to lock up more people in the UK at the moment. But the prison's closing. But over the last 7 years, I've been working in Reading Prison, and that's where I first started testing and piloting the programme. In that time, I've been told that we've put over 500 people through the Chrysalis programme. Now, in the background, we need to remember that on average, 75% of people that go to prison reoffend. Okay? I have been told by the prison staff that they're only aware of four people that have been on the Chrysalis programme that have come back.
Wow. That's sensational.
Now, let's pretend it's not four. Let's pretend it's 100. Well, you know what? That's remarkable, remarkable statistics, because some of them might have gone to other prisons. But, you know, typically, other people that aren't on Chrysalis programme, 75% of them will come back into Reading Prison. But this is remarkable figures that we've got, where we've really turned that ratio completely on its head. So that's one thing that's really good. And what I'd like to sort of put on top of that is the cost of putting someone in prison in the UK is on average £45,000 a year. But if you look at the total cost of reoffending, from someone being caught by the police, going through the court system, probation, elements in there as well, and prison, you're now talking about probably over £100,000 for reoffending to capture someone. But let's go back to that £45,000. So £45,000 to keep someone in prison for a year, it were cheaper for me to send them to Eton or Harrow School.
Yeah, of course it would be, yeah.
Now, I reckon that if I did that, I'd probably get a more significant change in that individual than sending them to prison. But another side of it, how about for that £45,000, I gave them a basic salary and a basic job, and I trained them, and I sorted out their housing. I can guarantee I could do that for less than £45,000. And again, the likelihood of that individual reoffending is greatly reduced.
Yes, indeed.
So we believe that the Chrysalis programme has impacted on the public purse. You know, one person, £45,000. We're talking about 400 people. Do the maths. You know, minimum cost just the prison, if you take into consideration 100 grand for each person, you're talking about tens of millions of pounds the Chrysalis programme has saved the public purse.
And that's not adding the productivity they will then contribute to the nation because they're now gainfully employed.
Absolutely, because remember, I said it before, it's not about rehabilitation, it's about reintegration. And I'll come back to that in a moment. I just want to touch on that in a moment. The other really interesting statistic that we've got at the moment is that we're currently running in a new prison in the Midlands of England called HMP, Her Majesty's Prison, Oakwood. This is a very large prison. It can hold up to 2,000, maybe 2,500 people. Yeah, currently, it's got about 1,600 people, give or take a couple of hundred over a period of weeks. And we started operating in that prison in September 2012. And we ran a program with 10 individuals then. By the time we run the program usually lasts one day a week over 6 weeks, roughly. By the time we got to the end of the 6 weeks, we had a waiting list of 140 people.
Wow.
Wanting to do the Christmas program. Now, what's really amazing about that is we haven't advertised the programme. This is just viral marketing from the 10 people that were on the programme talking to other people.
That's fantastic, yeah.
So we don't advertise the program, and it's not compulsory, it's voluntary for people to attend. By the time we got to Christmas in 2012, we had a waiting list of over 300. By the time we got to April 2013, we had a waiting list of over 450. And currently, we have a waiting list of in excess of 600 individuals that would like to do the Christmas program. So when you've got people that are crying to get on a program, these individuals, this is now a badge of honor to say that they've been on the Christmas program. This is something that it changes the way of thinking. I've had wives and girlfriends write me letters to tell me how much their partner has changed for the 6 weeks that they've been on the program, which is quite amazing. And we've also had, just use a couple of examples, we've got several individuals that, you know what, they haven't done very well in addressing their offending behaviour. So some of them, horrible thing to say, will die in prison. One man in particular, 68-year-old guy, has been in prison for a very long time. And when I first met him, he was talking about the likelihood of him dying in prison. He's gone on the program and the Christmas program, and as a result of that, his probation officers contacted me and basically said, what have I done to this guy? Because he keeps ringing up every week to talk about the material that he's learned each week. And he's never done this before. So he's going through all the material with the probation officer on the phone. And they said that the change in him is quite remarkable. The result was that this individual ended up with a real window of opportunity and was released out to an open prison a few months ago. And I went and saw Bob in this open prison, and I said, Bob, you know what, I'm really proud of you that you could make that change. And he said, David, you know, yes, I had to do that, but without the Chrysalis program, I'm telling you now, I would have died in prison. That's the thing that's helped me to make the change. So for me, when we get those sorts of results, it's quite remarkable. And if I was to take you, Winston, into the prison now and randomly allow you to speak to people, whether it's the governor of the prison, the staff in the prison, or the inmates in the prison, or some of the people that have left prison, I can walk away and know that you'll come back to me and you go, did you hear that story? Because every single one of the stories are quite unique and quite amazing, the impact the program has had. So it's very exciting.
So what are the plans for this program? Is there the government going to adopt it? Are they going to expand it? Because you've got big waiting lists.
Yeah, well, would you believe the sad thing is lots of people get locked in their way of thinking and they can't change. And I'm afraid our Ministry of Justice over here, they don't want to hear that they're not getting things right. And again, when you look at, I'll quote something else that I quote very often, a new truth or paradigm does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the new light. It's rather because the older generation die out and a new generation come in with a new way of thinking. Now, that's what I'm facing at the moment. There is a whole tranche of people within the Ministry of Justice that will not simply say, you know, it's not our fault that this isn't working. We're not being blamed for this, but maybe we need to stop and try something different. What they see this as is criticism of themselves, yeah, because they're running the system. They need to just let go of that and realise that we can do something much more powerful. The really exciting thing for me is that, would you believe, the work that I'm doing in Australia is really exciting for me because, for some reason, you guys over there are much more accepting of new ways of thinking than, alas, they are in the UK.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that. That's a good note. Now, David, let me come back to something. You used to run training and development in Royal Mail. If a boss was listening to this, what are the key points a boss takes out of this in getting staff to perform?
Well, this is fascinating as well because The Chrysalis program is not an offender program. The Chrysalis program is a program, a very, very good personal leadership and personal effectiveness program I happen to be using with offenders. To date, I have run the Chrysalis program with school children, with the unemployed. Of course, I've worked with offenders, but I've also worked with homelessness as well. And I will be going into University College Hospital London, into their brain surgery department, and working with the top consultants in one of the world's leading brain surgery teams, and using the Chrysalis program to help them create a better team. So the Chrysalis program is not an offender program. It's just a very powerful program that evokes change.
And it's still based on those four parameters?
Yes, it's still based on those parameters. But what changes around that is, of course, my passion, because being a magistrate, I particularly want to help offenders. But from my experience in Royal Mail, the program is about helping people to change their way of working, their effectiveness, their communication, their interpersonal skills, their self-confidence, their self-motivation, their self-esteem. All of those things are addressed in the program. And that's relevant to all of us in every walk of life.
Yes. So you're turning out people who have a better understanding of themselves, better self-confidence, better self-image, and therefore a willingness to, I suppose, put in, to believe in themselves and grow.
Yes, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about an offender or an employee. When someone takes responsibility for their actions, then good things start to happen. There's no more blaming the boss or blaming them or they over there did this to me. You start realising, wait a minute, I did this, which means I can do something differently. I have the control over this. And that's quite empowering for individuals to realise that they can actually change the outcomes by doing some very simple things, which we show them throughout the programme.
So that's the learning and development that you do with them, is it?
Yes.
And addressing their thinking.
Yeah, and Winston, to give you an idea, I often say to people, it's a bit like when we run the programme, we know that there's certain, I call it gifts, within the programme that will strike a chord within someone, and then you'll suddenly see this really massive change taking place right before your eyes as they're going through the programme. But the interesting thing is, I don't know which gift will trigger in which person, but I do know if you stay till the end, one of the gifts will give you a powerful lesson in learning and help you to achieve things in a way that you want to achieve. Achieve a change that you want to achieve. Not that I want to achieve, that you actually want to do. So as long as people stay on the program, we get some amazing results at the end because they've gone through this sustainable transformation in their thinking, behaviours and everything that follows.
I suppose some of them are dragged kicking and screaming to the program. How many drop out on the way? What's the percentage?
Well, again, when I talk about offenders, I'm very mean at the beginning of the program. At the beginning, I actually say to them, look, if you don't want to be here, you know, excuse my language, piss off back to your cell. Go now. Because I don't want you in the room. If you don't want to be here, go now. Yeah, and I'm very harsh at the beginning. If you don't want to be, go. Because the people that want to be here want to be here, and I do not want you disrupting their learning. So what we find is that typically we try very hard to select, but we also try and create supply and demand by saying we've only got, well, to give you an example, we've only got 20 places on a course. There's a waiting list of 600. So tell me why you should get a place on this fantastic course. Okay, and then if you come, you need to engage and participate. Because if you don't, we've got 600 people waiting to get on the course. So we'll take you off and we'll put someone else on it. So you don't have to come, but if you come, you have to commit. So that actually drives a different set of behaviours. What we've also found that even with doing that very well, we'll still end up with one or two people sneaking in for the wrong reasons. And again, we probably find that the first module is really difficult for people to get through because it really gets them to start thinking about their ownership of the problem, accountability and responsibility. And some people, alas, are not ready to hear that message yet, that you're creating these problems, no one else is doing it for you. So we end up with probably a 10% dropout on the first module. What happens after that, whoever we have after that module, we pretty much keep them till the end of the program.
Yeah, they stay in, yeah.
Yeah, so the retention rate is 90-something percent, which is quite remarkable. And if you take from week two, it's pretty much 100% from week two. Because we know that people, one or two people will drop out in the first phase because they're not ready for that learning yet.
Well, David, it's a remarkable work that you're doing, coming from a background in training and development via the bench and now changing the lives of so many people. What are the possibilities of this? Will government embrace it? Will you find a benefactor? Because it seems like important work. It seems it needs to be multiplied 100-fold, 1,000-fold.
Well, you're absolutely right, Winston. And what's nice for me is that when people go on the programme, and it doesn't matter whether it's someone that's working in the brain surgery team in the hospital, or an employer, an aviation company that I've worked with, or an unemployed person, or an offender, one message that I get over and over again is, why didn't I do this program earlier on in my life? So one of the things that we've got to look at is how we can get to prevention rather than cure. Because at the moment, when we're working with offenders, we're doing corrective stuff, we're doing the cure bit. If we can actually go upstream and start working more with schools, which is what I'm really lucky that I've been able to do in the Northern Territory in Australia, what we're doing is we're doing prevention. There is a massive saving in money and people's lives by getting people further upstream. So that's really exciting stuff. And I wish, I'd love to have someone that gets this as powerfully as I do and the individuals that are on the program, because we can actually change and help people to change their lives. And we're talking about tens and thousands of lives that impact on hundreds of thousands of lives. And it's a very simple process to do it. And the good news is it works.
Works very powerful. So if people are interested in taking this further, maybe there's a benefactor out there, maybe there's somebody that wants to invest in the program, how do they make contact with you, David?
Well, really nice and easy. If you contact me at chrysalisprogram.com. Again, you can easily find me and David Aparicio, and the spelling is David Aparicio, no dots or space or anything like that. David Aparicio, APPARICIO, at chrysalisprogram.com. And program is spelt with two M's and an E, sort of the English way. And again, if you go on the website, there's some contact points on there that you can get to me. Or simply Google David Aparicio and you'll probably be able to catch up with me that way as well.
David Aparicio, thank you for your time. It's wonderful work. Thank you for sharing it with us. That's been amazing.
Thank you very much.